Blog Talk Radio.
Delicious Talk. This is your host, Gail Delicious Johnson, and we have a wonderful show this evening on Bringing Sexy Back. We have a very special guest in the building. Authoress Terry E. Lowes is the owner, operator, and distribution of books and public speaker. She is an award-winning writer, ghostwriter, and humanitarian. Author Terry E. Lowes has published 8 books in 4 years. Her 8th book, titled Insane, which is a poetry short story blend, is a book that pulls back the curtains and reveals that ugly side that we all have and make the truth stand out blazing through the pages of the book. Sometimes you need to know that no one is unique. We all have things that are embarrassing, but once you realize this, then the healing process is easy. Just like her previous release of Peeling Back the Mask, which is a nonfiction saga of the dirty little secrets exposed in the church that no one wants to address. Authoress Terry Lowes has also been promoted to Director of PR and Promotions for Chapman Peterson Booking Agency. Due to growth in her literary field, she has resigned from that position of director of PR to further her successful her successes as officially April 2012. Author Terry E. Lau has, of February 2013, started and hosts her own radio segment titled Author's Corner via the WMEL 104.1 FM DJ Mel Entertainment via Lau City Radio Internet site, where she showcases unknown and known writers, authors, editors, screenwriters, poet, and aspiring talent in the literary field. Okay, we're going to get right into this very interesting authoress, Terry. And I had the pleasure of meeting Terry Lowes in June here in Washington, D.C. at a book festival that Lamont Carey sponsored back in June. So if you ever get the opportunity to meet Terry Lowes, you're going to be in for a treat. And right now I'm going to bring her on. Good evening, Terry.
How are you? How are you doing?
I am fantastic, darling. Couldn't wait to have you on the show. Couldn't wait.
Well, I thought you were going to say, Gail, thanks for allowing me to be on your show. And I know the listeners are going to get a treat because when you do it, you don't hold back nothing. You make it do what it do. So I'm glad to be here.
Well, thank you, darling. And also to let you listeners know, I was over there on Author's Corner a couple of weeks ago, and I had a blast with Terry B. and Terry E. Because Miss Lyles was out of town the last time I was there, but there are two Terrys over there. But either way, I had fun with both of them. So we're going to get right into and find out what Miss Lyles has been up to, where she's been, and what she's getting into. Take us back to your childhood. What was your childhood like?
Oh, wow. Okay, my childhood first, I like to say I'm a minister's daughter, so I spend a lot of time on weekends helping out, giving away food at the food bank, in church 24/7. My parents was very strict, man. You know, they had scared me so bad about, you know, sex, because being a female child, they don't want no little boys tampering with their daughters. Man, they scared me so bad about sex. My mother was anal. I mean, and I ain't mean to be crude, but I'm going to tell it like it is. You know, even when laundry day would come along, she would check your underwear, make sure she better see a menstrual cycle when you became of age. Man, she was freaking. So, you know, sex, I ain't want to do nothing like that. I was a good girl because, man, it was nothing nice.
Well, did you have any brothers and sisters?
Oh, yes. I have two brothers, Stanley and Philip, and a sister named Sylvia. I had another sister, Jackie, but when she was 1 year old, some little boy threw a rock at her because my mother didn't have enough film to take his picture. And my mother took my sister to the hospital, Franklin Square Hospital in Baltimore, Maryland, when I was living there. And they cleaned it up and said it was nothing. It turned into a tumor, and it progressed worse and worse. The tumor started to grow. They had to put a shunt inside of her throat. They wanted to have a brain surgery, put a horseshoe on her head, you know. She eventually died from that, but it just goes to show you, you know, when kids get these little scrapes and bumps, for these parents out there listening, don't take it lightly. That is nothing. Do your research, because I'm a living proof that I saw how a little scrape turned into more because the parents just took verbatim what the doctor said. Okay, it's nothing, but do your homework. These are your babies out there.
And I'd like to welcome our co-host, Rhea. Rhea, how you doing, darling?
I'm doing good. How are you?
And
hey,
Ms. Terry Lowes is on the line.
Hi.
Yeah.
Hello, Ms. Lowes.
How you doing this evening?
I'm going to be muting the phone when I'm not talking because they're working in the apartment upstairs, and when they start hammering, it gets kind of loud.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Okay, so let me ask you this, Terry. Now, you have a brother and two sisters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you the oldest? Where do you fit in?
I'm the baby, and I act like it, too.
Oh, isn't that something? I should have known you
youngest.
Was the baby.
Yeah, and trust and believe, I was catching all kinds of crap. Now, you know, on my show, it's not censored. You can use a little nasty words from time to time.
Right, my show
isn't
censored either.
So if it slips out, forgive me, audience.
No. This show isn't censored. It's for mature listening audience. So anybody who have virgin ears, they do have shows that are especially for your virgin ears, but it's not on Delicious Talk, okay?
Because I
and,
was tempted. Okay.
Wow.
Because I'm telling you, they were so mean to me because I guess I was a tattletale too. Because when my mother would come home from work and she said, "Who did what?" Man, I was like a bird. I was squawking. I was telling it all. And they would beat my ass every time she wasn't there.
Wow. So,
oh, my goodness.
So you have children as well, right?
Well, not
and
children.
You're a grandmother.
I have one child. My daughter's name is Nicole, and my daughter, you know, this is weird how God can use you. My ex-husband, he was in the Marine Corps, and while he was away on maneuvers, he met this female. She has passed away since then, but he committed adultery. He cheated on me. Didn't know a thing about it. You know, I went past my mother-in-law house to take my daughter to see her grandmother, blah, blah, blah. You know, I was picking up his picture all adoringly. Ooh, my husband. Ooh, and all of a sudden these pictures fall out. These nude pictures with this chick on it saying, "To my Ron." And I'm like, what the hell? You know, and so that was it, you know, because my ex-husband got me when I was a virgin. I met him when I was 13. I lost my virginity at 17 and a half. We got married right away at 18 because he couldn't try this no more. But the thing is, you know, this female, she wanted him so bad, you know, and he told me afterwards, but it really don't mean nothing. He said that, well, because you were such a good girl and you wasn't trying all that little freaky things like, you know, oral sex and anal sex. Hell, I'm brand new. I don't know shit, okay? I ain't doing nothing. I just want you to get on and get off. You know, it was his job to teach me. But anyway, he met this chick, right? And so she hurried up and got pregnant by my ex-husband because she felt like if she could get pregnant by him, she was going to keep him. But anyway, he held me up. He wouldn't give me a divorce for nothing. It took me 5 years to get a divorce from this guy because he still wanted me because he was trying to tell me he wanted a good wife, a good woman as a wife, and he wanted to have the ability to whore around. I don't share. You know, I don't believe in sharing. I believe that if you can't teach me to be the woman you want me to be or and vice versa, then don't sit there and bring some mess to me that you've been messing with somebody else. I don't do that. But anyway, let me get back to the story because I'm getting off track here. You know, how God can use you. You know, last year I had total shoulder rotary cuff repair on my shoulder. And because it was my right shoulder, and I'm not trying to be crude, I couldn't even wipe my ass, okay? And I asked my daughter. She said, "Ma, I can't do that, Ma." So her sister, which is the daughter that was between the lady and my ex-husband, my daughter is raising that lady because that's her half-sister. Mother's passed away. But anyway, she stays with my daughter. So L'Oreal, she's kind of slightly retarded, you know? So she came over, she helped me, you know, and I was just such in a bad mood, you know. Here, I got my ass bent over, and she wiping me, and I'm fussing that you ain't getting the spot right, you know. I'm just straight tripping, you know. And so that's why I know God is good, because ain't nobody going to sit there and wipe your dirty ass, and you talk shit to him, okay?
That's true.
But I did, man. I was straight tripping. I was just mad because it was the idea. I can't move my arm. I can't do nothing. And I was so frustrated that I was limited that I was taking it on her. But had she not been slightly retarded, you know, been somebody and their wife on my mind, they probably wouldn't even have done it for me. So thank you, Lord, for seeing down the road. You know, even though the adultery was the reason why I divorced my ex-husband, but that child, the offspring of that situation, you know, helped me when I was going through a time where I needed her. So God is good all the time, you know, and I'm trying to learn from that because it took me a long time trying to learn how to love her because all I saw when I looked at this female was your mother cheated on me and ruined my marriage, you know, but I had to go past that, you know. I love her, but I don't trust her, you know. I'm still cautious because that thing says something like she want to worship the devil, so that scared the hell out of me. So, you know, I'm cautious, quiet as cat.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. When did you decide that you wanted to write? Or what inspired you to write your first book, and when did you start writing?
Okay, it was 2008. My Aunt Vernelle in South Carolina had passed away, and I went up there for the funeral. And while there, I was just so amazed because most of the time when I go to a funeral, the family members are always begging or pulling, trying to say, I'm going to get this, I'm going to get this. You know, they just act ugly, you know. But this particular time, my Aunt Vernelle's kids, she got three daughters, they were so gracious and waiting on the guests hand and foot. Like, you know, they was consoling us instead of being consoled. And my cousins that came from all over the globe there to visit, young cousins, they owned their own businesses, working for FBI, CIA. I mean, they was doing fantastic. Now, I was doing great too, man, because I'm down here in the country, man. Cost of living is not that expensive as it was in Maryland. And I was getting a workman's comp check because I had got hurt. And I was living lovely, and I wasn't complaining. But that inspired me, like, I can do something other than sit and, you know, use a check every week that I was receiving from workman's comp. So, you know, I said, well, Lord, you know, I got home and I was so impressed thinking about my family. And I'm sitting there and I'm playing Steve Harvey on the radio because I like watching, I mean, listening to that show. And Steve Harvey was talking about God is still in the blessing business. Stop being mad because how he have made it, you know. Everyone has a talent. I don't care whether you might have five or six. Everyone at least gets one. And I'm saying that makes sense, you know. And I said, Lord, what kind of talent do I have? Now, I'm not going to sit there and perpetrate no lie. I didn't hear no voices booming in my ear. This is your talent. I just felt compelled in my spirit that the Lord was trying to get me to see that you always had the gift for gab. You always had a way of being witty, you know. So why don't you take that stuff and just write it down? And when I decided that's what I was going to do, stuff started spitting out of me. I was writing stuff, my first book, Brown Bag Poetry. I was spitting out like 7 and 8 poems a day. It was like it was nothing. That's what I'm saying, you know. And then I went to the bank one time to deposit my check. Now, this lady will ask me, do I want a credit card? So I said no, because I'm not trying to get in debt. I'm trying to get rid of the credit cards that I had. But then I said to myself, well, you know, maybe I might need some money. If something goes bad, I'll have a cushion. So I said, I'm going to take this credit card. I'm not going to use it, but I'm going to take this credit card. That credit card was for $2,500. So then as I started writing all this stuff right, and I would call my family and my friends, I'd say, how did it sound? How did it sound? And a lot of them was very receptive, said, oh, this is good. This is good. My sister got annoyed. She said, don't keep calling me all the time. Tell me you listen to this. I'm tired of this. I said, okay, fine, because we were like boiling water anyway. So I just kept on. And then when I went online to find out the top 10 publishing companies, Traffic Publishers came up as number one out of Canada. I said, wow, okay. I went to see about a book package, and the book package was $2,499. And I had just enough with that credit card. And also, by going with them, my book immediately became global because of the different subsidiaries that Traffic had out of Canada. So I'm happy as a lark, you know. And then when Brown Bag Poetry came out, a lot of people was down on me because it has sexual explicit conversation. People say, oh, how you be a Bible school teacher? You writing that stuff. But you know something? In my spirit, I felt like God wanted me to write what I wrote because a lot of people out there, Gail, you know, they believe that because they're in the life, whether they're into drugs, prostitution, or they're doing things that they're ashamed of, they believe that they can't come back and seek God's face, you know. And because I'm a Bible school teacher, it lets them know that, hey, Bible school teaching the kids, I do that and I build my relationship with Christ. Selling books, it's giving me a resource because I'm not trying to be a broke heifer, you know, and God don't want his children to be broke. And so I kept it the same. And because of that book, Quiz is Kept, a lot of people came to Christ. You might not think so, but a lot of people read some of the stuff that were spiritually based, and they read some of the stuff that were of the world, and they loved it. And because we started communicating and engaging in conversations, people realized, you know, ain't nobody, you know, without shame or some kind of embarrassment. We might look like on the outside that we have nothing, that we're ashamed of, but that's a lie. We all got some secrets. And that is why I decided that particular time, my first book was published December 17th, 2008, that I was going to make sure that all the books I wrote was going to be exposing the truth. My stuff is not bougie. It's not like, you know, if I do poetry, the wind blows and billows in the trees. That's garbage to me. I keep it real. I'm in your face with this shit so that when you read it, you can feel like, damn, I'm right there. I feel that thing, you know. Then that's what I do. I just do stuff that's, you know, about real life situation that people don't want to talk about. That's my niche. And each book has paid for the next book because it went from $24.99 to the next book package was $32. The next one was $5,000. And each book has paid for the next one. So I thank God that I had the ability to be honest enough to expose some things that has happened to me and people that I know and people that I observe, because we're not unique. Nobody's unique. If you look at people and you talk to them, everybody got some scars. And I just
That's
put it on
true.
Paper.
That is true. Now, we're going to talk about all your books, but I want to get into your eighth book, which is Insane. Now, I've been reading that, and I'm very impressed by it because, you know, just like you had mentioned, your books, excuse me, are so direct. Even the poetry and the little short stories that you put in here, the one, I've Got to Give This Up. I really was into that because you speak of being a vigilante, and then there was something else you put in there about putting crazy glue on a cheap man's
penis. You talking about, yes, ladies, let me tell you, listen up. For all y'all women out there, y'all act like y'all in these relationships that are bad and you feel like you don't have no recourse, or maybe that guy's whipping your ass. Let me tell you this. Okay, be meek and be humble. Let that nigga go to sleep, okay? Excuse my friend for using the word nigga because, you know, we got to talk about people in a better frame of mind. But let that guy go to sleep. When he go to sleep, you get you some crazy glue or some nail glue. You drop a little bit on his eyelashes so his eyes will be stuck shut. You drop a little bit on his penis and stick it to his stomach. So when he try to wake up and piss all over himself, you get a pot and beat the hell out of him. And he will leave you alone because he'll know you're crazy.
You know, girl, we must be sisters somewhere down the line because I have always thought to do that to a man. Put
that's
some crazy
right, that's
glue
right, man. You know,
penis
people,
to his
you know,
stomach.
People
don't mess
with me because, you know, I had to learn not to be afraid because, you know, a lot of people, you know, some people are lucky enough to have had a good man all along, but a lot of us women have had knuckleheads. People want to put their hand on us, you know, and I just got to the point, this is how I rationalize this. I feel like, you know, if you don't like what I do or like what I say, you have the right to voice that opinion and walk away, you know, because I feel like you're not going to beat me and then after you beat me down, want to talk to me. You talk to me first, and if that don't work, you take your little happy ass somewhere else because the simple fact is, I'm not going to put my hands on you. I'm not going to run behind you and nag you because I see if you acting all ugly, okay, I'm trying to back away from that thing. And I believe that as an adult, no one has the right to physically assault you or emotionally abuse you. And it's sad, though, but a lot of times the stature of a woman, you know, and the strength of a man, we immediately feel like, you know, we can't defend ourselves, and we get scared, you know, and we're scared to fight back, or we need this guy in our life because we have children, and we're not sure that we can make ends meet. That's what the welfare department is for, okay? That's what the House of Ruth is for. That's what the people at the church is for. Don't act like you don't have no choices. Don't let somebody beat you down, your self-esteem, that you are not willing to fight back, because that's the devil is a lie. I'm telling you, he has to sleep sometime, and when he sleeps, when he sleeps,
go to sleep one way and wake up another way.
And get out. You get your bags and get out. Don't kill him. You ain't trying to do no jail time. But you can't do, but you know, you can glue his eyes shut because he can't find you. And you know, and by the time you beat him and put him in the hospital, and once he get out, he ain't going to want to look for you because he's going to know, oops, this chick got some fire. So, ladies out there, you know, don't do it. Don't let somebody steal your self-esteem, your worth, because your self-esteem controls how you feel about your worth, you know. And a lot of times, if you don't feel like you're worth anything, you let people use you sexually, screw up your mind mentally. You know, that is not the road to go. So I'm just saying, you know, if you need to talk to a sister, call me. My number is 443-956-8753 because I don't play that mess. I don't do that, you know. And if you need somebody who's strong enough to speak up for you, I'll do that too. If you need somebody to go to bat with you, I'll do that too. If you need somebody to go with you to an agency, I will do that too, because we need to stick together and stop acting like, you know, we can't reach back, because once somebody make it, it's our responsibility to reach back and help somebody else along. I'm so sick of these sorry people out here who get well known or get a little stature. They act like they better than somebody else. No, I'm keeping it real. I'm thick and juicy. I'm a cutie on duty. I've got a lot of good sense. I got wisdom, and I don't mind helping a sister out or a brother out, because there's some guys out there being abused too. You know, that's how I carry it, because, you know, some, I don't care what I have or don't have. Integrity is free. And so I'm bigger integrity.
That's true. Now, tell us about, why did you name your first book Brown Bag Poetry? How did you come about that?
The reason I named the first book Brown Bag Poetry is because of the sexual explicit content in the book. I know that when they send Playboys or things in the mail that have a sexual nature, they put it in brown paper, you know, and the picture on the book is a bag with a woman coming out of the bag. And the woman that's coming out the bag, if you look at her face and her back and her lips, it's all shades of a woman, from Caucasian to black, you know, to anybody of melon, you know, different shades if you look at that. And most time, people have associated a woman by calling her an old bag. That's why I have brown bag poetry, because the woman is different shades coming out of a bag, you know, to explain the material in the book and to explain that they call women bags.
Oh, okay. Now, your second book, what was your second book? What inspired you to write that book, the title of your second book?
Okay, the second book, what inspired me to write that book, I think I was going through one of my many surgeries that I had to have, because I used to be a tractor trailer instructor, and I hit a patch of black ice and I had a rollover down a ravine about 4 or 5 times, and I'm lucky to still be here, because they had to cut me out of the truck, and a lot of people counted me out, but God counted me in. And that book has a lot of some witty stuff in it, about stuff like disabilities. You know, I made fun of disabilities from your back or whatever. I made fun of different things that we do, because when you're hurt and you're recuperating, you got a lot of time to think. You know, I wrote a book about when you fart and everything, you know, and made fun about grandmothers when their wigs fall off their head when they go visit their family. So that's a book about making fun of our shortcomings, you know, and that's more of a witty book. It's funny, and I just be clowning about different things, because when you're home and you're sick and you can't get around much, you look at things and you're very observant. And so I'm looking at everything, and everything is a joke to me, because I say, wow, you know, when you are calm and when you are still, you see more things that you never noticed before, because when you're busy, you're just doing this and doing that. But when you're laid up because you can't move, you'd be surprised how much things that you see and observe. And I just took from what I see in life and what people said, and I just made a joke out of it.
Wow. I said wow. Well, that sounds good, because, you know, humor is the cheapest medicine you can give anybody. And I can imagine somebody reading that book who may be down and out, or, you know, just opening that book and reading it and getting a good laugh out of it.
Yes.
So that's
and
a
that's
good
the purpose,
thing.
You know, because you're right, Jill. I believe that once, you know, you laugh, I don't care what you're going through, for a moment in time, you just feel better about yourself. You know, you just feel like, wow, I needed that, you know, and then you start, you know, feeling good for the moment, because a lot of times things are just hard, you know. But I also wrote about a lot of things that weren't so funny. I wrote about people, you know, getting caught up in drugs, teenagers being, you know, messed up, you know, in the path of the storm, you know, and people like Katrina can relate to that. and damage people, you know, maybe you might allow me to just read one thing, you know, out of that book, because that book addresses a lot of things, you know, a lot of things.
Sure.
Okay, well, I'm going to pick something at random, whatever my hand goes to, and I hope
okay.
it's clean. Okay.
And this is from the Wild, this is from the Wild book, right?
Uh-huh, yes.
Oh, okay.
And this is called Built for Comfort.
Okay.
Being overweight doesn't make you look bad. Hold your head up and be happy and glad. It's not the outer appearance that makes you a star. It's your inner beauty that wins by far. Don't worry about not being thin or built like a rock, because being built for comfort is what it's about. You are heat in the winter and shade in the summer. Like a big classic car, you're built like a Hummer. Everything doesn't suit everyone. Just handle your business and get your job done. You know the saying that you have a body by Fisher and a mind by Mattel, but I have a body built for comfort that makes the men yell with alluring secrets, but not show and tell. And for some of you who don't know what that means, well, Fisher make cars and Mattel's a board game team. So your body might be built with a cute little chassis, but your mind is childish and slow as molasses. So you can think what you want about this big old body, but I caught you staring at me because you know I'm a hottie.
Wow. So when you, because, it, you know, it just seems like, you know, so far what I've read in excuse me, in saying, as things that you may have even experienced or been through, are you lonely, for instance? They just don't understand. Those are, you know, two little stories that I read, and it just makes me think by you just, you know, us speaking about, you know, what you write about. It may have been something that you may have been through or something you know somebody had went through. You know, how did you actually come about to put those together like that?
Well, to be honest, everything that I write about in each book, you're going to find a part of me. And people who write books, the truth ain't in them if they say the book is not about them. You know, because a lot of times as a writer, when you start writing, you're trying to fill up pages, because people who don't know, you need at least 108 pages to get an option to have your book in hardcover. Okay, so when you start writing, sometimes you have a lot of material, and then sometimes you need fillers. But, yes, are you lonely, that particular thing? Yes, that's about true story. That's about me, because people think that because I'm happy-go-lucky and I'm always here and there that I'm not lonely. And sometimes I am lonely, and I'm going to tell you why. I'm happy to be with myself and by myself, but I'm lonely for that relationship where I know somebody's knocking, coming in the door, and they just want to be with me. I'm not talking about somebody coming up a booty call. I can get that hands down, no problem. And I have people begging right now, trying to get in where they fit in, but I'm not feeling that, because I ain't trying to take care of nobody, quiet as kept. But I want somebody to love me when my eyes is running because I have a cold. I want somebody to love me when I ain't feeling well and I'm sick and I can't move and I need them to fix me a meal. I want somebody to love me when I'm freaking out because, oh, damn, I lost a pound. I want somebody to love me, you know, after they smelled me, use the bathroom, you know. And I ain't trying to be crude, but, you know, life is a bunch of things, you know. And the thing is, I don't want nobody to come over every now and then and hug me and try to penetrate me and act like, oh, well, I'm loving you. No, I want somebody on a day-to-day, you know. And I can feel lonely because when holidays come around, I get tired sometimes just being there with the family. I love my family. Yes, I do. But I want somebody to, you know, when I sleep, I know that they got my best interest at heart. When I sleep, I know they're not trying to rumble through my drawers and look for stuff. When I sleep and company's there, they're protecting my interest. When I'm away from them, I put a smile on their brain. You know, so, yes, I'm lonely for relationships. And as quiet as kept, you know, there's a lot of people who are in relationships, married and living in situation, and they're lonely because they don't feel that connection. So, yes, I'm lonely, but I'm available, and when the right guy come along, pow, I'm up in the house. Best believe it. Shoot.
I know that's right. Well, this, we're going to still get to some other of your books, but I really want to get on Peeling Back the Mask. You know, you're exposing dirty little secrets in the church that no one wants to address. And I know there's a lot of dirty little secrets in, you know, some churches, be it Baptist, Catholic, or whatever, you know, and true, they don't want to address them, you know, as far as like it, even in the Catholic Church, they don't want to address the fact that the priests are molesting the altar boys or molesting these little boys. And, you know, they don't want to address that. They sweep it under the rug and, you know, they pay off so the priests can get off with whatever they've done, you know. And same thing goes for, you know, any church. They have their secrets that they don't want to address, and they don't address them. So can you give us a little taste on some of the little secrets that you found out and want to expose?
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of people in church. They dress real nice, and people look at them, and they thinking that they all listen to that because they look like they got money, you know, and they smile in your face and act like, oh, everything is grand, you know. But, you know, there's a lot of trollops in the church, you know, and for people who don't know what a trollop is a fancy word for saying a whore, a slut, you know, because a lot of these women in the church that I've seen, even in mine, they run to the same church, like, say, for instance, if you was a Jehovah's Witness, you run to another kingdom hall, you know. So what I'm saying is I belong to the Church of Christ. They run to another Church of Christ, you know, and they expect, because the Church of Christ members, they teach that the men are supposed to take care of the woman, so that if a woman has a job, she ain't got to contribute nothing to the household unless she want to. So they big on following the letter of the Bible, you know, but we're human. We all fall short, you know. But a lot of these women, they'll go from church to church trying to find men that's going to sit there and finance their shopping spree or whatever they want, you know, with the men knowing that they ain't supposed to touch unless you marry, you know. But, you know, we're human beings. Don't nobody want to get married to somebody and not taste a try of the merchandise, because I ain't trying to be stuck in a marriage with some guy who can't satisfy me, because I don't want to cheat on him. And quiet is kept. If I had a man that I had to wait till we got married before I got a chance to look at it, hold it in my hand, or let him do me and stuff, you know, that ain't happening. I'm sorry. Forgive me, but I'm going to have to pray for me, because I ain't going to remarry nobody else unless I know that the thing is going to fit. It's going to be long enough. It's going to do what it's supposed to do for me, because who wants to get married to somebody that, you know, ain't got nothing to work with, and then you frustrated. You're sitting over there at the edge of the bed all pissed off and everything and don't want him to touch you, and then that make you want to cheat, you know. But a lot of them women in my church, man, they go from church to church trying to be slick, you know. They want the guy to fill them up on their breasts and stuff, you know, but they don't want to give up no booty, but they want all the financial rewards that these guys can provide, because these guys, they believe in working. And also, one other little secret, I got this one guy in my church, well, now he wants to be called Jeannie Mae. This guy, well, now I don't say Jeannie Mae, because he says that God is reversing his body, that now he has breasts, and now he's a woman, so he's dressing like a woman. But everybody's scared as hell when he walk in the door, because they don't know what bathroom he's going to use. They can't help staring at his crotch, you know, and it's just freaking everybody out. And this person got up in church and said, look, I have changed my name. I'm a woman now, blah, 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 blah. I don't care what you do, you know. You know, but, you know, it makes people wonder, you know. It makes people uncomfortable, and, you know, they're whispering about that. But this person is a nice person, you know. I believe your sexuality is what it is. You do what you want to do behind closed doors. But he says that God has reverted his body, and he's turned into a woman. You know, that's what he say. I think he's probably never had nothing to work with. So because it probably was small, and because he didn't gain some weight, he didn't got breasts, you know, he's probably saying that. But, you know, what do I know? I ain't never seen him naked.
Right. Wow. Well, I know that there are definitely a lot of secrets in the church, as far as, like, because I was baptized a Catholic and went to Catholic school, catechism, and all that good stuff. And there was a rectory on the grounds of the church and the school. Then the convent was right next to the school. And one of the priests and a nun were having sex, and the nun got pregnant.
Wow.
So, you know, it goes on like that. And then they excommunicate them from the church when there's no... It's not written anywhere in the Bible that it says that a man cannot be married and still serve God. And they take the vow of celibacy. They take the vow of poverty. They take the vow of, they be taking all these vows that are really not even necessary, because God never said that,
you had to be single to serve him. You know, and he never said you had to be poor to serve him, or rich for that matter. You just have to be the person that he created you to be, and, you know, to serve him. But they just take it a little bit too far. And then in some of the other churches where these pastors have their wives and then they're taking home another member and have menage a trois, you know, different things like that, you know. But, yeah, there are a lot of secrets in these churches. And
yeah,
I really,
the times might expose them. Because, you know, my thing is God came for the lost, the sick and the downtrodden. And the thing is, I'm not going to run around and act all hoity-toity and act like I'm too good because I'm the Bible school teacher, my daddy's a preacher, my grandfather's a preacher, that, you know, I can't relate to you because we all got dirt. You know, I got some dirt about me, and thank God for Jesus that I'm still here. But, you know, what people don't get is that, you know, when you sit there and you act all stank, like you better than somebody else, you're the reason why more people ain't coming to church, because you're making them feel like they ain't good enough. And my thing is, I don't care what you got jeans on, you got your hair all matted. You know, if you come to church as you are, if you repent and acknowledge Jesus Christ as Lord, you know, and get baptized, you know, the Holy Spirit is going to convict your inside, you know, and the people there, if they really are the children of God, they're going to help give you the things that you need, whether you need shelter, whether you need clothing. The real Christian is going to be there to support you and help you get to the next level. And the way you came in is not going to be the way you stayed, you know. But these people in the church, these religious wannabes and everything, they're making people not want to come to church because they're looking at your life. And they see how
right.
you do and how phony you are when you're not in church, and they don't want no part of that. And I can't blame them, you know. But, you know, with me, I'm going to take one heart, one mind, one person at a time and share Jesus, you know. I'm not going to try to shove it down your throat, because we are supposed to plant the seed, let someone else give the water and give it the increase. You know, just share Jesus, you know, because I believe firmly in my spirit that you can't come to Jesus and stay the way you came. So you might not see their change or their growth, you know, but don't let nobody turn you away, because we're definitely the situation, the economy, the world. If you look at the news, I mean, everything has gone amok, you know. We're in the last days and times, and it's the time now that if you're not in church, you better get up in the church. You better run to Jesus as fast as you can, because when the time comes, the door is going to be shut. And he's going to shut some of us in and shut some of us out. And the trees can't hide you. The mountains can't hide you. You will not be able to hide from the word of God, you know. And that's the truth. The Bible is your basic instruction from leaving this earth. And don't be so hard on yourself, because I myself, I got up in front of the church and look. I said, I'm not as good as all of y'all, but I'll let y'all know I have a problem with cussing. I love to cuss, and I'm working on it. And I'm better than I was, because when I was a truck driver, man, every other syllable was a profanity coming out of my mouth. But I'm working on that, and sometimes if it slips, oh, well, you know, I'm getting better and better. I'm not trying to stay the way I was. And I tell people, don't let some things about you that you don't like stop you from seeking God's face, because he loves you in your mess. He's there in your darkest hour. He will not leave you. But you got to believe it, you know, because sometimes your family and your friends, those are the ones you can't count on, but Jesus came for you. The ones that got a problem, there's no problem too hard for God. I'm a living testimony. I ain't supposed to be here, but I'm here, you know, and just believe what I'm telling you. Anything you're going through, whether it's with your finances, whether it's in your relationships, whether it's with your family, believe this, when you're going through something, God ain't going to take you there with not taking you the rest of the way. And everything we go through is a test, you know. And when you think you can't hold on no more and you just want to cry all night long because you say, why somebody is persecuting me, joy will come in the morning. There will be an answer. But you got to believe it, you know. And like I said, you ain't got to believe what I tell you. It's in the Bible. Read it for yourself. Don't let somebody get up in the pulpit and tell you what you should do. What you need to know, anything about your life, is in the Bible, you know. So I love who I am. You know, I'm the type of person, I'm an advocate for people who have been picked on. You know, I believe in the underdog, you know, because I believe that we are here at this time in life for a reason, because I believe that God is looking for his strongest people, his warriors, because and when he come again, he's going to need those people who are going to stand up and fight, not going to be scared away, because the devil the devil is real. You know, and for y'all who think the devil ain't real, if you believe in Christ, you better believe in the devil. If you believe in right, you better believe in wrong, because the devil is slick. He's slick.
Mm-hmm.
He will use somebody smooth, pretty, got money. He will entice you away from what you know is right. But you better stand on the word. I'm getting ready to start preaching up in here, but, you know, I'm sorry.
Let me
I'm getting
see if my
away.
Co-host has any questions for you. Rhea, do you have any questions for Terry?
No, I'm enjoying listening to her talk.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back.
I said she has such energy.
Yeah. We'll be back in a few seconds. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to get into Terry also is a ghostwriter, so we're going to get into that and a couple of more of her books. So we'll be back after this break.
Well, we're back, and that was Real Love by Sky. I love that song. It's so beautiful, isn't it? Well, we're back, and our guest this evening is Terry E. Lowes, award-winning author of 8 books. And she's a very busy lady, very talented. And like I said, I had the opportunity to meet her in person right here in the DMV at a book event back in June, sponsored by Lamont Carey. So we're back, Terry.
Okay.
Now you have a few more books we're going to get into. Let's go to this book, Confessions. What was that about? And how did you come up with that title?
Well, most of my books, I try to title them where it's self-explanatory. In the book, Confessions, it's just what it is. It's different confessions of things that people, you know, need to get off their chest, you know. And that's why the cover of the picture, you'll see a young lady with her hair covering one eye and like she's speaking through, because confessions are some things that, you know, a little hard to get off of your, you know, get off of you, and that's what it is. A lot of things that I just had to let it out, let it rip, you know.
Well, are these confessions of yours personally, or just some confessions of people who may have told you something and you put it in the book?
Well, to be honest, it's a mixture of mine and people that I've talked to, people that I've saw what they went through, and it's a confessions is about you, me. It's about everybody. A lot of me are in this book as well. I'm not going to say which one because I don't want people to think they know that much about me, but I'm in the book too.
But there's nothing wrong with that, you know, because like they say, when you write about something, you are characters in your book,
exactly.
You know, because I know
exactly.
I'm characters in a few of my books as well. So, Confessions, when did you write that? And what number book is that one?
Okay, now, it's been 4 years, and I've written 8 books, working on 9 and 10. So I really can't tell you because I've been trying to, like, put out, like, 2 books a year. You know, so Confessions, the first Brown of Poetry, Wild Setting, so Speechless, Forgiveness, Confessions, book number 6.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, So now we're going to go with Speechless.
Just like the book says, things that make you, like, gap your mouth open wide. So, oh, my goodness, she went there, did she? For instance, I got Speechless right here. I'll read you my first poem out of this book. And this is I wrote a couple of novels, but I like to stick mostly with short stories and poems because you can get your thought across relatively quick. And just hit it and keep it moving. And this particular book was brought by DFACS, which is a department for families. It's like the welfare department. They bought a lot of my books. I was at a show, and because of the first poem in this book, and it's called Come Here, Little Girl, it goes like this. Come here, little girl, and sit on my lap. Let me molest you while your parents nap. This will be our secret that you can't tell. I'm a sick predator from the depths of hell. Shut your mouth and be real quiet. If you tell the truth, then I will deny it. Years from now, when you've become grown, you'll be mentally messed up because you were molested at home. I'll return on another day. I'll smile at your parents, and you'll be my prey. Usually assaults will happen closer to home, even though I'm your uncle who won't leave you alone. So, you know, it is what it is. And so people said, wow. One lady, I went to this venue, pouring to me, where it's empowerment for women. And this lady, she started crying, and she said that her uncle had did the same thing to her, and she bought the book and some other ladies. And this is the one thing that my books do. It helped women connect with themselves, because a lot of times guys lie to themselves. They act like they don't have no issues. They act like they don't hurt. They don't feel pain, you know, because of that macho alpha man syndrome they be caught up in. But, you know, a lot of women can be in touch with their emotions, and I write for them mostly because I'm a female, you know, and I want to help other sisters be strong, because sisters are mothers, grandmothers, aunts, you know, and they're in a position to help raise families. So if the women in the family are not wise or not strong or suffering from low self-esteem, then they can't be the role models that's needed to bring these babies along. So I just really, you know, try to reach out to women so that they can get stronger and get to start the healing process. Plus, I'm a freak, too, you know, and I write a lot of nasty stuff. You know, I keep it real. I like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Now, it's funny that you wrote that particular poem about a little girl being molested, because in one of my very first book that I wrote, which is What's Past Is Not Forgotten, I wrote a poem in there that was dedicated to one of my girlfriends out of three who was actually, you know, raped by their biological fathers. And the title of that poem is He Touched Me, and it's about a little six-year-old girl whose father, you know, was sexually molesting her. But she didn't know this. She loves her father because he tells her that I love you, you know, this and that. And then the mom catches on to it. And, you know, but it's a very profound poem. When I first wrote it, I let the girl who I dedicated it to in my book read it. And she says, would I, you know, because I said I'm going to put it in the book, she said, would I put, you know, dedicated to her, and that's what I did. Her name is in the book and everything. That's in my first book. And then the fact of the matter that little girls as well as little boys are being molested, just so, it's just so prevalent how these predators, even women, are molesting these children and killing them at a rate, you know, every day. A day does not go by that someone has not raped a child, killed a child, molested a child, maimed a child, or did something horrific to a child. And children are our most precious commodities. You know, they are loaned to us, you know, from God. And people are just abusing them. So, you know, that's the worst thing that gets next to me when someone abuses a child in any way, sexually, physically, mentally, anyway. And I was on the internet today reading where these three little boys, three little black boys, I didn't know their ages, but why did they rape a mentally challenged child in a bathroom at school? And he tried to tell the teachers and everything what had happened. They sent him back to the classroom. I mean, you know, then you have these adults who turn a blind eye to these things. So, you know, like I had mentioned, that's very profound, and that's, you know, like you said, the people were touched by it as well as, you know, the people who read my poem, too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have to be a little bit more considerate and a little bit more aware of these things when they happen. And, you know, listen to your children, women. You know, the day a man killed his girlfriend's son, he was babysitting, and don't leave your kids with men that you don't know. Somebody you've been with for 5 or 6 months, you getting up going to work, leaving this man, he need to be taking his butt to work somewhere as well, and you come home and your baby's dead. He told the police that the baby had fallen or something. He goes outside and sells some reefer, come back in the house, and the baby's non-responsive. He calls the ambulance, but it was too late. They did an autopsy. The baby's liver had been, he had punched the baby so hard till his liver was split in three places and something else was going on. But, and then can you imagine coming home and your baby's dead? And he said the reason why he hit the little boy, because the boy 4 years old, the little boy was giving him lip. That's what kids do. It does not warrant a punch in the stomach that will kill them. Maybe you could say time out, but, you know, time out sometimes don't work. But sometimes you might have to spank them legs or whatever. But it does not warrant some of these ways these people are disciplining these children, especially these boyfriends and these baby daddies and these people who don't care about their children. So kudos to you, darling.
But you know something, Gail, also, too, people need to understand, because even me, myself, when my grandkids get under my skin, everybody needs to understand things are going to happen. But when you're angry or you're mad, you need to take the time out. The adults need to go somewhere and cool off, because you should never try to correct the child when you're all pissed off, because you're going to be using that strength that's too strong for a child.
Right.
You know, you're going to be hitting that child because you're angry at what that child did. You need to take your little happy behind somewhere and chill out. Drink some tea, you know, eat something, go to sleep. And then when you're rested and you calm, then you discipline your child, because sometimes even the parents are abusing their kids because they don't know how to take a time out, because they probably was abused as children, and they feel like, you know, the harder I beat this child, the more they're going to listen. No, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way.
Yep. So your next book, Say It Ain't So.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and just like the title, I talk about things like that will get your attention. You say, oh, my goodness, say it ain't so. I mean, all my books are self-explanatory, and I do that because I know that a lot of times people who don't really care for reading and people that just happen to browse by your table if you're out somewhere, you know, it's just a fluke if they decide to pick up your book. And a lot of times it's the cover of the book or it's the title of the book. And so I try to use things at first, like, make you stop. And if I can get you to my table, I'm going to do the rest of the talking. But that book, Say It Ain't So, I got an entry from that book. I would love to read it for y'all.
Okay, go on.
The entry is called I Am Not African, I Am Something Else. It's a letter to the so-called real African-American. No, I am not African. I'm something else. I am the descendant of warriors and freedom fighters whose begging tongues of let my people go evolved into the demanding tongues of let freedom ring. I am the descendant of Harriet Tubman, Frederick Douglass, Marcus Garvey, Malcolm X, and Martin Luther King, the very ones that fought against impossible odds and situations so that I can stand equally with our once oppressors and speak on equal grounds without fear of persecution. I am the people that came to this country by force, who took it over and affected the world, forever changing it into our form and image while you were enslaved and bound in two countries. I am the Black Panthers, the NAACP, and the Rainbow Coalition. How dare you come here to my homeland and look down on me as all that was accomplished so that you, yes, you can reap benefits which were never allowed to be enjoyed by my ancestors. How dare you look down on us with arrogant pride and make your proclamations that we are not African and we are not acknowledged, when we should be praised often for what we have done and how high we have risen. You should come here to my homeland with a deep appreciation and respect for the strength we have shown in the face of a mighty enemy, us, a people who multiplied and took over a nation in only a few generations that should have taken many more, us, a people whose walk, talk, dress, and music has transcended races, borders, and countries, yet you come with insults, abuse, and the very segregated walls that we fought to destroy for over four decades. So I say to you, no, I'm not African. I'm something else. I'm evolution. I'm a Black man.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was heavy. I am something else. Okay.
Yeah, because, you know, sometimes, really, and I'm not putting all African guys down, but sometimes they come here and they act all stank, like the Black Americans here, we ain't good enough, they're better than us. You know, come on now, y'all come here to get a job so you can send the money back home because y'all still have relatives not doing well. So don't come here acting all cute because y'all think y'all the original Africans. Okay, yeah, y'all still there. But the thing is, you don't have to call me African. I'm a Black woman. And I want a Black man, you know. Come on now. I'm proud that, you know, I can tell these people, don't get it twisted. Don't come here act like you're better than us because you're from Africa, you know. Hello.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I know you're going to get pissed off at you for having me on your show. They said, that big mouth.
Well, you know, I can handle that.
Okay.
Now, let's talk about your being a ghostwriter. When did you, and I'm a ghostwriter as well, so can you explain to the listening audience just what that entails and the time and the effort and the energy that goes into being a ghostwriter?
Oh, yes, yes. First of all, so people know, don't get it twisted. A ghostwriter is someone who writes a story on behalf of someone else. And because of that, they are relinquishing their names and their rights for royalties and any money earned on that book. If the person that they wrote the book for pay them up front. Now, I was assigned to write the life story of one of the ministers in my church. I had a contract I wanted this guy to sign, and he refused to sign it. And I'm saying, okay, he's a minister, okay, in my church. No, he kept saying, I'm going to make you a wealthy woman. I'm going to give you half of everything. You know, I'll pay for your supplies and stuff like that because it's a long process. And basically all he gave me was documentations of different things that happened in his life. I had to do the research on the computer. I had to be up all night long trying to take his documentation and make it sound like something somebody wanted to hear. Because you can tell me that you was in the military on this particular day, that don't mean nothing to nobody unless I add the other stuff to it. Like, well, when you was there, you was under persecution because they was calling you nigger and boot. You know, I got to get documentation to sustain that information. I have to go and get pictures for things that's happening in the world as well along that time frame. And I got so pissed off because this guy played me to the left. Now, first of all, he's a minister, a man of God. He's going to tell me he didn't want to sign a contract because I'm going to do right by you. And I'm believing this hype. You know, I'm up all night long on the computer. I put my own book on hold, Confessions, that I was supposed to be writing at that particular time. And I'm sitting here, and the title of the book was Forgiveness. So I'm saying, I'm typing. I went to the guy's house several times. I gave him a tape recorder. I told him to tell me things that he remembered. I told him to give me papers of different things to prove that he was in the military and where he was at such and such a time. You know, I had to constantly go back and proofread it, go to his house, and because he's a senior citizen, he acted like he couldn't read nothing. I had to literally sit there and read everything to him, back and forth. Then we even went to a lawyer. He said we were going to go to a lawyer and make it legal that if this turned into a play or whatever, I'm getting my half and he getting his half, and if we die, our family get half. And so while I was there, the lawyer says, does he owe you anything? So I'm thinking that, okay, if we sign this contract, no, you don't owe me anything because the contract makes it clear. Okay, so I'm waiting. I get a draft back from the lawyer of everything we agreed to in front of the lawyer. Then the guy sit there and say, well, it's my book because the story is about me, because his wife and daughter all up in his ears telling him that it's your book, Henry, because it's your life. I said, what? I said, first of all, let me say something to you. I didn't want to write nothing about you. You came to me. So, yes, you had to pay for the paper. Yes, you had to pay me for my time while I was writing it, but you promised to pay me the balance of Ghostwriter so that my name would not be attached to it. I even went to the publishing company and told them, look, let him get the royalties because the book is about him, it's going to be for him, blah, 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 thinking in good faith that he was going to pay me. This buster didn't want to pay me. You know, I was so pissed off, so okay, I put my name on the book, but then I lost royalty to the book because I already gave it up to him. And so he went a trip and clown. I said, you know something? That book was about you, but I created that story. You know, you just gave me some papers. I said, if you had came to me with a manuscript that you wanted me to proofread and edit it, then it would have been your book. But for you to come to me just some pieces of paper and I created a story around your life and where you was at, it's my book about you, you know. So that's why right after that, I was so pissed off. I said, because you know something, that's the only book you're going to ever have. And today, this man ordered all these books thinking he's going to be big time. He gave away some, sold some. Now he got a stock load of books at his house he can't sell. And look at me every day in church like, I wish Sister Lyle helped me get rid of them. I ain't helping you do shit. You know, you on your own, because that one book, you think that don't stop one show, because since that one book, baby, I done wrote three more. So, you know, you stuck with that one book, I wrote three more and continue to move forward, because God don't like ugly. And here you a man of God, you know, and you're going to trip on me. And then they got all nasty, roll their eyes. Come on, it's your life. It's your book. It's your damn book. The book is about you. Get real. Come on now. If it was your book, you would have brought it to me, and I would proofread it and say, okay, send it. That would have been your book. You didn't write nothing. Right. You ain't pick up a pencil. You ain't get no chalk. You ain't do shit. Give me a break. Yeah.
Well, that sounds familiar to what I had did, you know, ghostwriting a book for a client. But I'm going to have a show, you know, geared to having authors, publishers, graphic designers, and, you know, different people who are in the literary world to speak up about the pitfalls the good and the bad, the pros and the cons of being in the literary world, because it is definitely a cutthroat business. Just like any 9-to-5, you have your haters, backstabbers, and people who don't want you to progress. You know, so I'm going to do a show in the near future, so, you know, people who went through what you went through, what I went through, and I've heard so many other horror stories of publishers went through, and, you know, how this young lady with Triple Crown, I think it was Triple Crown, how she had beat a lot of people out of money, you know. So we're going to do a show, you know, so people can basically air out those issues. And, you know, like I said, your story almost sounds exactly the same as the things that I went through with the client that I had ghostwritten that book for. But I've taken that book back because it was a breach in contract. He never signed the contract, and he never finished paying me. Then he literally cursed me out, you know, like I had did. And I still, I swear, I don't know. I can't understand why he spoke to me the way he did, but... Anyway, in any event, you know, people learn from their mistakes, and that's a mistake I'll never make again, because if someone wants me to ghostwrite a book for them, it's going to be half the money up front, and a contract will be signed in the beginning. You know, you're not going to have me stand up night after night, you know.
Writing. Hey, Gail, what people don't understand, too, they can go online and do the research for themselves. They can see that ghostwriters' fees usually start at $25,000 to start.
I know.
Because
you know
anything in the future you are not entitled to. It's not cheap, you know, and it's heartbreaking that when somebody, when you put your heart, sweat and tears up all night long, you know, you got to keep proofreading, keep editing it, you know, and you ain't getting paid for all that extra stuff, and somebody sit there and spit on you. But, you know, I just want to say this real quick before we run out, we ran over time, but, you know,
right,
I talked about the different things
that
do, funny and, you know, heart-wrenching. Can I read something that's about the sexual part of me? Because I want to, you know, let people see
that
I'm so diverse in the things that I write about. And this is something that's sexual, and I like to read it so they can see, well, hey, you know, this chick, man, she's bad to the bone.
Okay, well, go on, darling. And then I'll really call
this
it.
This poem is from Brownback Poetry. This is called Just Me. In the stillness of the night, I find myself unable to sleep, sprawled across my bed while I watch my chest rise and fall, breathing slow and effortlessly. Softly, I caress the smoothness of my skin ever so gently. Then I slowly close my eyes as my eyelids flutter like a butterfly in flight. I reach upwards and cup my breast between my hands while paying close attention to the occasional pinching of my nipples, shyly peeking out as to be noticed. My fingertips begin to journey upwards slowly, gently, to trace the outlines of my mouth as my lips begin to spread at the tingle of my touch. I find myself drifting off to the place where I laid next to your nakedness, with my mouth licking your skin velvet until my tongue, where nothing matters and time stands still. I pull and squeeze in a sucking motion upon your flesh as I grip it between my hands. It's hard to catch my breath, and while arching my back, I feel like I'm falling into nothingness. I sigh with moans of lust and escaping my lips, and moisture oozes over and consumes my body. Beads of sweat glistens upon my brow. No longer can I contain the pulsating rhythms within the walls of my vagina, needing to feel your hands upon my body while lying close in our nakedness. Heat rises from my neck in the dead silence of the night, my nipples pressed against the moisture of your skin, stuck as if we're molded into one. I bite my lip while I moan with pleasure beyond my wildest dreams, climbing so high I can't breathe as I feel a rush of hot, pulsating liquids oozing slowly from me, and I've lost all track of time, not sure where I'm at, but not wanting to leave there, unable to breathe, longing to linger while the thickness is in the air of our hot, passionate sex. I slowly inhale in an effort to cool down from the fire burning inside of me, longing for an ice cube to drip its coolness upon me as the water runs down between my breasts to the cradle of my navel. You lick my inner thigh as I struggle to find the strength to continue, stroking the hair upon your neck, and your tongue darts out to tease the lips of my vagina with your playful motion. I heave my body upward towards your sensuous, hot, moist tongue, waiting for you to penetrate me deeply when I realize I'm alone and it's just me.
Ooh, but I'm wrong.
Yeah!
call. Let me see if this caller. 410, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Jade. How are you? You have a question
I'm
or comment?
I have two quick comments and a question.
Okay.
I first want to say I love the conversation that you ladies are doing because it's encouraging me to write my book.
Okay.
You know, I've been talking to you about being stuck.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a great encouragement. That's number one. Number two, I just wanted to just kind of give you just a brief of my synopsis of when people do you dirty, when you're ghostwriting for them. And I believe that what it is that the person doesn't realize how hard you put your sweat and your tears into in that muscle and in those thoughts into
mm-hmm.
your story. And because they don't see that, they don't have that gratitude for what you're doing for them. They don't realize the hard work because they're not doing it themselves. And so
mm-hmm.
I think that's really selfish of them to take advantage of you ladies like that. But I believe that that's one of the big reasons is because they don't know what you go through because they haven't gone through it. But the day that they do, they have to sit there and do it themselves, that's when it backfires on them because that's when they're going to realize, that's why I hired a ghostwriter. I can't do this. I can't do this shit.
Absolutely.
So that was
you
another.
Said it. You hit the nail on the head, and that's what it is. They can't see what we go through, and they don't have the gratitude. You said it so eloquently. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. I also wanted to ask you, Ms. Curry, what got you into writing? Was there something that encouraged you to start writing?
Yeah. I went to my aunt's funeral back in 2008, and I saw that my relatives there were doing so well in their individual life. They was owning their own businesses, had high profile jobs, you know. And I'm saying to myself, you know, I'm getting a workman's comp check. I'm living lovely. I said, I can do something better than this. And because the simple fact that they got along so well, most of the time when you go to a funeral, people always grabbing, trying to steal something, trying to take something. And they were just so accommodating the guests, and they the ones that supposed to be grieving the most. And then I went home, and I was sitting there in bed just listen to the radio, and here comes Steve Harvey. He did his little devotion before he started the show, and he was saying how some people were mad at him because he made it. And he said, well, you know, God is still in the blessing business. He give all of us a talent. Don't get mad at me because what I do, he said, we all have a talent. Do what you do. And then, like I said earlier, I said to the Lord, I said, Lord, what can I do, you know? And he didn't speak to me, like I ain't hear no voice, I ain't going to start tripping until that lie. But I felt compelled that he was trying to tell me, well, Terry, you run your mouth all the time, put it on paper. And I did, and it just sprung forth a gateway, man. Everything just come pouring out like pow, pow, pow. And I became prolific, not by choice, just by God's blessing upon my life.
Mm. Well, continue to do what you're doing, sister. I enjoyed your stories.
Thank you.
Continue doing what you're doing. I enjoy your stories and your show. And,
oh, I sure appreciate you. Thank you so
some
much.
Some people aren't fortunate enough to know their blessings. That's the sad thing. Some people will leave this earth and never know what their calling was. But
mm-hmm.
for those of us that do know, we have to embrace it and take advantage. So thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. We have another caller, 470. Are you there?
Hey, I'm here. How are you?
I'm okay. Who is this?
This is Mr. B.
Hey, Mr. B. How are you? You have
I'm
a
good,
question
baby. How are you?
I'm fantastic.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I enjoyed the stories. And, you know what I'm saying, I felt on a lot of stories, especially the one about the little girl getting molested. You know what I'm saying? That's something that happens every day, like she was saying. And as far as the ghostwriting, I know it's hard because I do write music. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And the industry is so scarce with people stealing songs, or if the songs make it, they really don't want to pay you for the songs. And you know what I'm saying? And that's the issue that I have, because when I write, I try to keep everything for myself. But you know what I'm saying? I have to take the proper procedures now to copyright everything and get slip notes and slip sheets so I can make money off the music that I have instead of giving it away free. and doing free hooks and things like that. So I understand people really don't know what it takes to go into a song or into a writing something and putting your everything into it. That's what you feel like, you know, that's your heart. And a lot of people don't understand
absolutely. That. Yeah, Mr. B, you telling the truth, baby. You're telling the truth. I mean, you work hard, you know, it's something came out of you and it's sounding good and somebody gonna sit there and take credit for your work. Yeah, and it's sad that mm-hmm. you gotta do that. You can't trust nobody to even show them your work because as soon as you show it to them, you know, they feel like they got more, you know, inroads somewhere else. They want to steal your stuff because you're just trying to make it from day to day. But, you know, do what you do, baby. Protect your stuff.
Yeah, and exactly. And people have to be careful because there's a new thing they're doing now. You can write a song or something or a book or something, and instead of them using, if you don't sell them with that song for the price they want, they'll emulate your song and make another one just like it. But
what?
You know what I'm saying? It won't be the exact song. So that's the new thing they're doing now. If you write a song, they'll make a song similar to yours.
Oh, that's ugly.
And put that out instead of using your song. So it's a rough business, but you know what I'm saying? Like you're saying, you got to just put everything in God's hands or let him take over.
Mm-hmm.
Do
wow.
you know Kendrick Lamar, Mr. B?
Yeah.
Are you
familiar? Yeah, I know Kendrick Lamar.
He took one of a spoken word artist that I know personally and put some of his spoken word into a song that he did. And that was quite ugly because a lot of people was giving him the credit for that, you know. And the person who he did it to, you know, this person is very gracious because he lets people use his poetry, you know, as long as you ask him. And Kendrick
right.
Lamar did not get his permission to do that. So they're doing all kinds of things to people to, you know, put themselves out there. And I think that's a low point in a person's life to do something like that. And this guy, his work is copyrighted. You see what I'm saying? But he's going to, you know, eventually deal with that on a legal issue because
right.
you can't just take somebody's stuff just because, you know, you make your song sound good. Because, I mean, this guy, Kendrick Lamar was getting a lot of praise for that song. I mean, that rap,
yeah.
was, especially when because they were saying, who's that guy? Who's that guy doing the spoken word? And I don't know. I never heard Kendrick Lamar say who it was or never saw when he wrote anything on YouTube who the person was. But, you know, you just can't do things like that to people. And just like Jade had mentioned, people don't realize the energy, the time, and, you know, all the things you put in
yeah.
doing these things for these people. You know, they don't be up night after night missing meals, missing recreation, you know, not eating and, you know, giving up things just to do something for a person who's going to be ungrateful and unappreciative. You know, so, you know, like I had mentioned, I'm going to have a show where, you know, people in the literary world can, you know, come on and express the different things that they went through, be it good, bad, or indifference. You know, because I think a lot of these things need to be heard and a lot of these things need to be out there. You know, so I
right,
appreciate
right,
you.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just called. I told you I was going to invade your show. This is the takeover. I'm taking over the station.
Well, I'm going to,
okay.
if it's okay, I'm going to give you a call probably tomorrow because it may be a little bit too late once we get off the air, but I'm going to give you a call. So we have one more book that we didn't speak of. Or did we talk about forgiveness, the book Forgiveness, Terry?
Yes, no, we didn't. Forgiveness is a book that our ghost wrote, and he tried to steal it. And it's about Minister Henry Parham's life after being kicked out of Fort Benning, Georgia, out of the Army and dealing with the Jim Crow racism of the South, you know, and that's the book that was in question. And when I go to different venues, yes, that book is on my table. They buy, they do, they don't, because I am not working hard to promote him. And if I make that book a movie, He ain't getting a red hot penny. You know, he ain't getting nothing. Swat.
Well, nothing's
not
owed to him
arrow.
Because he didn't pay for it.
Oh, he did not. And now
right, that's
church,
the way I
day,
feel.
I,
because...
I had Bible class today in church. He always want to come up there and shake my hand, pat me on the back, and then tell me, look in my eyes when you shake my hand. You know, why I need to look at you? A snake is a snake. I know what a snake looks like.
Jesus.
Woo, that was direct. Now, that
I know
was
that's
direct. Fair. Yeah, I mean, because, you know, sometimes people think that they can treat you and talk to you any kind of way, and it's acceptable. But I'm the type of person, I keep it professional, you know, because if I was the person that I was some years ago, it would have been on. But because I've learned that, you know, all that hooping and hollering and screaming, you know, when you argue with a fool, I mean, when a fool is arguing with you, everybody know who the fool is. But if you argue back with him, it's going to be hard for them to distinguish who's the fool here. You know,
yeah, exactly,
both of you acting like fools.
Foolish.
Yeah, you know, so I just, you know, I keep it as professional as I can, and that's how I'm going to keep it, you know, because if someone wants to scream and holler and act a fool, then that's on them. You know, one thing they can't say about me is, well, she was screaming and acting like a fool to me. Nope. You know what?
That's right.
I will listen. You can hang the phone up on me, which he did. And, you know, he pulled a bitch move when I tried to call him back and didn't answer the phone. You know, but my thing is people have motives for different reasons. And a lot of red flags was going up along the way, but I was sort of like not paying attention to them because I was so focused on what I was doing for him.
Mm-hmm.
But trust and believe, I learned a lot dealing with him. And I appreciate that because if it wasn't for him, I may not have learned the things that I learned as far as like being a ghostwriter. You see what I'm saying? So thank you, client. I don't want to call his name, but thanks a lot for giving me that lesson and, you know, giving
me my
fifth book.
You're absolutely right because before I wrote Forgiveness, I had wrote poetry and short stories. Forgiveness was my first novel that I wrote. And because he tried to screw me, he taught me a valuable lesson about contracts. He taught me that, you know, I can't just look at people at face value and think they're going to do right by me. He taught me what it was to write a novel because it forced me to do research online to see just how you do a novel because poetry, pow, you can write it out. Boom, that's it, you know. And format, whether you want to center it or left a line, you know. But to write a novel, I was like, how you get into the chapters? How you do this? So it helped me because Peeling Back the Mask was my second novel, you know, and I'm working on my ninth novel, which is called Big Girls Don't Count Us Out, because a lot of plus-size women feel like, you know, they ought to feel lucky because a man want them. Baby, let me say something to you. Just because you're big don't mean you ain't cute. Just because you're big don't mean you're not desirable because everybody don't want a thin girl because sometimes even when a guy's hitting a thin girl, you know, that bone be hurting, you know. A lot of guys want a voluptuous woman. And back in the day, you know, it was a sign of wealth to be voluptuous. Different cultures feel like a voluptuous woman is the thing to have. You know, and my philosophy is, you know, when a guy's making big money, riding a big car, got a big house, he ought to might as well put a big woman up inside that puppy. Even so, you know. So you know, I'm glad you said that. I learned a lot about being screwed. God turned it around because he gave me some knowledge and wisdom I never would have had not that happened to me.
Right, and things I do believe that everything happens for a reason.
Exactly. Somebody's trying to talk. You've got a caller who want to say something, I believe.
Somebody wanted to say something?
I heard somebody say hello while we were talking. That was me. I was saying hello. I was just laughing
About the big girl
with the big house and the big car.
That's right, baby. Hello.
Well,
that's what I'm talking about, you know. Yeah, like I tell people, I'm not F-A-T. I might be P-H-A-T, but baby, I'm thick and juicy.
I like
you better ask somebody.
I like it. She don't know. Hey, Miss Delicious, you better tell her she's talking to the right one.
You have on Facebook. I'm Authoress Terry E. Lyle. Hello.
Yes.
And she nasty. She talking to the right ones.
Okay, come on. Knock on my door. I will answer and use double lock.
I know that's right. Well, we've talked about all of your books. Now tell us what you're doing now. What's going on with Terry Lyles right now? Where are you going and what are you doing now? What's your
next
adventure?
Now, writing two books. I'm also preparing to do a TV thing on Fox Networks here in September. This lady, she wants me to be on her show again, Pam with Unity. I've been on her show a lot, bless her heart, you know. She's down in Columbus, Georgia area. Also, you know, I like doing arts and crafts, you know. I do arts and crafts on the side. I'm a Bible school teacher. I'm trying to mentor the youth, you know, while I'm out and about trying to look all cute. I'm looking for a man in my life. You know, I don't need a man who's rich. I just need a good man. I want a man that is willing to go to church with me. I want a man that is okay to do a little freaky things, you know, in the privacy of our home. I want a man that ain't afraid to spend some money, ain't cheap. I want a man that's want to, you know, you be one, I'll be one, when together we make two and become a us, you know. And while I'm out there, out and about, you know, I'm looking for a good man, because a lot of men out there are hurt, like a lot of us females are hurt, you know, and I'm feeling that, Lord, you know, whatever you're doing, you fixing that man up for me and you fixing me up for him. Let us connect before it's too late, you know. And I'm just doing my thing, talking shit and looking. I am looking for Mr. Right.
No, that's right. Well, tell the listeners. Oh, we have another person with their hand up here. Let's see what this caller has. Caller 334, are you there?
What's going on, this granny?
Hey, Granny, what's going on, girl? You got a question or comment for Terry?
You know, she wrong. I like her because, you know, I'm straight cutthroat, baby. But I like this lady. I don't know who she is, but when she said something about Columbus and Fort Gaines, you know, I'm in Alabama, so I'm close to them areas. I got to do a research on her. But I like you. I'm looking for a man too.
Oh, well, thank you, baby. I'm in CEO.
Hey, I'm single.
Okay, call us, sister. Hello, we can talk.
I'm just picky as hell. I'm too picky. But Mom, dudes, you slipped this one by me here. I'm gonna have to call you after this show, honey. Hey, real Danny. I don't hear y'all talking, but hey.
Danny's not here. Rhea is listening because something's going on in the apartment upstairs, a lot of noise and stuff, so she's listening. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh,
yeah, but
well,
Danny's not here tonight.
Yeah, but
I'm taking over for Danny.
Okay, baby. Ask the question.
Okay.
Which one want to know?
All right.
You want to know my bra size? You want to see how I look? Baby.
Yeah, every time I get on the phone, Mr. Delicious, there's always something going down. There's always something going down. It never fails.
Yeah, this has been one heck of a show, you know, and
extremely entertaining.
Thank you. Yes, definitely. Definitely has been. You know, and I hope everybody who listened tonight learned something, or, you know, if you didn't learn nothing, then, you know, come back again. But we're getting ready to close the show down. I want to thank you, Terry, so very much for being here on Bringing Sexy Back this Wednesday evening, because you could have been anywhere else, but you was right here with all the rest of us, and I appreciate all the callers. And remember, Bringing Sexy Back is for the mature listening audience. Our subject matter is sexual but not limited to other social topics. We discuss relationships, current events, and issues relevant to everyday life. We appreciate you, our listening audience, for your questions and comments. If you have a topic you'd like for us to discuss or would like to be a guest on the show, send me an email at gjdelicious37@gmail.com. Or to either of my co-hosts, Rhea at RheaAlexis@yahoo.com. That's RheaAlexis@yahoo.com. And Danny at MunchDaMouth, MunchDaMouth@gmail.com. In the subject line, put topic or guest. We hear every Wednesday from 10:30 for an hour to an hour and a half of adult conversations. Tune in every first Friday of the month for Open Topic and the last Friday of the month for my musical show. On Sunday, y'all need to stop by Gail's Blues Joint. That's at 7 p.m. where I play the blues and sassy music. And remember, bringing sexy back does not mean you've lost your sexy. Bringing sexy back is a state of mind and how you perceive yourself. I want to thank you, Rhea, for being my co-host this evening. Mr. B, I'm going to give you a call tomorrow.
All right.
Thank you, listeners. I love you. I had a great time, girl. Don't forget, hook me up on Twitter, Facebook, Author Sherry
Love. Let everybody know how they can get in touch with you and get your books as well.
They can go to my personal website, which is www.terrylye.com. Go to Author House, go to Traffic Publications, go to Barnes & Nobles, go to Amazon, or just call a sister at 443-956-8753.
Well, all right. What about Facebook, darling? You left that out.
You can reach me on Facebook, Author Terry E. Lyle. I'm there. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm all over the place. Get in where you fit in.
Yeah, she also has a fan page on Facebook as well. Terry Lyles is out there, everybody. Please support her and, you know, get in touch with her. If you're not a friend on Facebook, go there and friend her. Terry Lyles will look out for you. Like, you know, she mentioned on here, she gives back. So, again, I want to thank you, Terry, again and again. I cannot thank you enough because you're just a genuine person. Like I told you guys, me and Terry met in person back in June here in Washington, D.C. at the book festival that was sponsored by Lamont Carey. And we are going to keep in touch because I'm going to get down to Alabama and visit her. I got some other people down there I want to see, like Miss Kane. And, you know, I have some people that are down in North Carolina. So once I get out there, I'm going to be making my little rounds, meeting people, because I love to meet people.
And make sure you bring your
baby to Chicago.
I got an indoor heated pool, sweetie.
I know that's right. And I love to swim, darling. So I'm definitely going to bring my bathing suit.
That's right. That's right.
Yes, ma'am. With that being said, everybody have a wonderful evening. See you guys here next Wednesday. Next Wednesday, I'm having a guest, Samantha Joyner. She's going to be telling us about women cheaters. How about that? We always talk about the men cheaters, where she's going to be here giving up the little tidbits about women cheaters. So, you know, if you want to learn something from that, come back Wednesday, 10:30 p.m., and my guest will be Samantha Joyner. With that being said, everybody have a wonderful evening. Love you guys. See you next week. Good night.
Good night. My Nana got the best radio show on the internet.
Good night.
Good night.